You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about expression engine security with Matt Weinberg. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Peers Conference. Peers is a tech conference for designers, developers, and web business owners that goes beyond the same old slide deck to curate a diverse group of speakers in development and business tracks bound to keep you on your toes. Want to learn something new? Love Expression Engine? Curious about craft? Learning all about Laravel? Come and be challenged in the coding workshops. Engage with other attendees and hear what's really going on in your industry, all while having fun with plenty of time to network and chat. Whether you're a pixel pusher, an artisan, or a maker, Peers is for you. In its second year, Peers runs through April 23rd to 25th in downtown Washington, D.C. Register today at peersconf.com.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor of the year. Hi, Leah. Welcome back. How was your vacation?
In one word, awesome. Yeah, no, it was so much fun. My sister and brother-in-law live in Ecuador, so I really had a great local perspective on the country, and we kind of traveled the span. So I did some stuff in the mountains, I did some stuff in the Amazon, and I did some stuff in the beach. So
awesome. Well,
a little bit of everything.
If you had to pick just like the best highlight of the whole thing, what would it be?
Beach.
Beach.
Lying around doing nothing. Drinking papaya juice.
Did you take like a lot of books with you or music, or did you just veg out and enjoy the scenery?
I did take one book, and mostly it was just vegging and listening to music.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, I really missed you.
Aw, I miss you too.
Well, because I kept thinking about what you were doing while I was doing stuff. And so it was a very stark contrast. But I'm glad that you got such a nice long break and got some time to see your sister.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. And those who follow me on Twitter, you would have, or Instagram, you would have seen that I did do the swing.
Oh, yeah, that was right away. You did that like your first day after landing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did it scare the crap out of you?
Let's do the swing. You know, the actual swing itself didn't scare me. I mean, it did. At first, I wasn't sure I was going to swing. Like, I was just going to sit there. But then, you know, my family was egging me on. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go swing. What scared me, though, was actually that treehouse.
Climbing to the top?
I didn't climb to the top. I climbed to the middle because it's attached to the swing, it was swaying, and it's high. So it's high, and it's swaying, and I couldn't go all the way to the top. I just got to the middle part, and I was just like, God, no, no. Yeah, that was more scary than
fun
than the swing.
Well, good. I'm glad that you bit the bullet and did it.
Thanks.
Conquered your anticipatory fear.
Thanks.
All right. Well, let's get to some news.
All right. So news in our world. There are just a few more days to submit your votes for the 2014 .NET Awards. If you love our podcast, hope you do, and haven't already, please take a few minutes to vote. So visit thenetawards.com/vote/podcast. We'll have a link in the show notes.
And conference season is in full swing, and we're giving away a free ticket to two upcoming events. Peers Conference and RWD Summit. If you'd like to attend Peers Conf this April 23rd to 25th in Washington, D.C., follow us on Twitter at ControlClickCast and send us an at reply telling us who are the female devs and designers that inspire you. We'll announce the winner on our next episode, which is out April 3rd.
If you'd like to attend the online RWD Summit April 1 to 3rd, follow us on Twitter and send us an at reply telling us why you want to attend. Winner will be announced on Twitter March 26th.
And lastly, we want to remind our listeners that we are sponsoring the weekly EE Help Chat with Arcus Tech. Join us every Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. Central to talk expression engine, web design, and web dev, or just hang out. Follow us on Twitter to get the Help Chat link each week. Now, let's get to news in the world of content management systems.
Based on feedback from their survey, Perch updated its solutions sections, which is a collection of work examples of how to use Perch. Not only did they add 20 new examples, but everything is also on GitHub. We'll have a link to the solution section and the survey in our show notes.
As Christopher and Ari mentioned in our last episode, Environments for Humans is hosting the Craft CMS Summit, a full-day online conference focused on craft. The Craft Summit is June 17th, and we'll have a link in our show notes.
There's also been a few more Statamic learning resources released, live workshops during PeersConf, and another one hosted by Clearbold. Plus, Jason Varga has written a tutorial on building a private photo site. We'll have links in the show notes.
And there have been a lot of releases lately in the CMS world, including Craft 1.3 and Expression Engine 2.8.1. So go check those out. And as always, we'll have links in the show notes.
If we overlook news about a CMS you favor or are interested in, let us know and we'll get it on our radar for future episodes.
So today we're talking about security audits and integration in Expression Engine with Matt Weinberg. Matt is co-founder and president of tech at Vector Media Group, a New York City web development and marketing agency. A renowned EE and e-commerce expert, Matt is both innovative and pragmatic. In addition to his focus on large publishing platforms and custom e-commerce stores, he leads Vector's development team in delivering reliability, speed, and stability in all projects. Welcome to the show, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Matt, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I'm president of development and technology at Vector. I co-founded the company many years ago. Actually, my partner and I started working together in middle school or high school, and we've just been doing it since. Now we're about 16, 17 people in New York. We have amazing clients. I have an 8-month-old daughter. I live in the city as well. And basically, most of my time that's not at work is just spent at home with my daughter and my wife. And my dog, who gets a lot less attention these days because of, unfortunately for him, he used to be king of the house and now he's forgotten.
Aw, poor baby.
He'll have a new best friend in a couple years when your daughter's a little older.
I hope so.
So why don't we dive right in? First things first, why don't we define what security actually is? What does it mean in general for sites?
Sure. It's a great question. You know, we have a really wide variety of clients. We have small startups that are like one person, and we work with also a bunch of like Fortune 100 companies as well. So we have a really wide range of clients. And I think security means something pretty different to all of them. In general, security is this idea that nobody should be getting access to your data or have the ability to make changes to your data without your permission. And that's obviously a very, very wide definition. In smaller companies, they're mostly concerned about people going to hack our data, are people going to be able to get credit cards if it's e-commerce, that kind of thing. With bigger companies, you know, they're often also even concerned about the backgrounds of our employees, the physical security in our office. And then beyond the client, again, you know, is your data secure when you're transmitting it, if you're doing with credit cards, if you're doing with passwords, are you storing passwords correctly? If you have SSL, is that set up correctly? What are the access restrictions on your infrastructure and all of that? So it's a pretty wide variety of topics.
And when you're dealing with an Expression Engine project, is there anything unique to that particular platform that needs to be dealt with in terms of security?
Sure. I mean, it depends. It depends on what you're comparing it against. I think that all pre-built platforms and CMSs have their own benefits and challenges, and I think all custom-built platforms have their own benefits and challenges as well. So with Expression Engine, I think you get a lot of benefits. I think even though EE has had its security issues in the past, and I'm sure there are current security issues as well, I think there's no way to avoid that. You know, every platform that's ever existed in the world will have security bugs sometimes. I think Ellis Lab has done a really nice job in the past, fixing security issues quickly, identifying them. They've been very proactive. And then, really importantly, a lot of the times when we're talking about security issues, we're not talking about even core Expression Engine stuff. We're talking about add-ons. Mm-hmm. And so Ellis Lab has given add-on developers a lot of tools to help mitigate security issues. So, you know, things like the input class and a lot of XSS protection, all of that. And it's not everything. Add-on developers still need to be careful, and we find security issues in third-party add-ons constantly. But I think that Ellis Lab has done a really nice job trying to help people not shoot themselves in the foot. Unlike, I guess I would say, WordPress, where, again, WordPress, a lot of people are on it, and I think WordPress is a great platform in many ways, but I think, in general, maybe it's its popularity, maybe just because there's a lot more add-ons or something, but you tend to hear about security issues there a lot more, and you tend to see a lot more poorly written add-ons sometimes. You know, the major WordPress add-ons are good, but I think there's such a long tail of just really poorly written WordPress add-ons that have a lot of security problems.
And so that general level of security within a system, is that one of the first things you focus on when deciding what CMS to use for a given project?
Yeah, I think so. I guess I would say we would never, if we had doubts about our ability to secure a specific platform, we would not use it, even if it were the perfect feature match for our client, right? Mm. Because it's not even worth consideration in that case. So if we're even considering a platform, which in our case is typically Expression Engine, something custom on Laravel, something custom on CodeIgniter, you know, maybe a little bit of Drupal, we've probably vetted the security there first. We very rarely would recommend something that's perfect on a feature sense, but we think has terrible security problems, because you just don't want to go down that path.
Do you ever have to have a conversation with a client about that if they came to you with, in their minds, a given software that they want to use, and then you have to educate them about why you don't want to move forward with that?
I think it's less about software with clients and more about features. We pretty often have clients asking us for features that are just nightmarish from a security point of view, and we push back. A couple examples I can give you. A lot of times clients want to be able to send password reset emails, or like password reminder emails that have the person's plain text password in the email.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm sure you've gotten before, you know, your password is matchdog12 or whatever. So like, you know, you can't do that, because if you're doing that, it means that you need to be securing passwords, or it basically means you need to be storing passwords in a really insecure way. So that's something that we have to tell clients. For us to be able to do this, it would mean that we're building the system in an insecure way. We're not going to do that. We want to make sure we're, you know, hashing the passwords and salting the passwords and bcrypt or whatever. Another good example is with credit cards. There are really good providers out there that allow you to tokenize passwords, and I can explain what that means a little bit if you'd like, but allow you to securely store credit card numbers so that you can charge those credit cards without having to store the number. A lot of our clients ask us, oh, well, why don't we just store this? Or why don't we just email plain text password numbers to whoever in their front office needs to process it? And you can't do that. You can't store plain text credit card numbers, and you can't be emailing credit card numbers around, because it's insecure, it's against PCI, and you're opening yourself up for a lot of potential liability. I would say it's more from a feature point of view than a framework point of view in that sense.
And Matt, I'm not familiar. What is PCI?
Sure. Sorry about that. So PCI is a set of regulations and rules and guidelines that was formulated by the credit card industry that basically guide you on what you need to do to secure systems. It's based on a lot of things, but for instance, smaller companies doing processing less money in credit cards may have less stringent requirements than larger companies that are trying to store data. And it's basically a set of regulations around what you need to do for security, how you store that information, how you transmit that information, and all of that.
So I'm curious, because you said, of course, it seems like common sense, we're not going to have plain text email passwords and stuff like that. So what are your thoughts about the popularity of tools like one-time password to send, or not one time, was it one-time password? One-time secret.com, where you basically go to that site and you plug in some one-time secret, and then you can send that link to someone and they can click on that link, and that link only works one time, and then you can no longer click on that link anymore. Like, is that secure?
I don't know them personally, the people behind this, and I haven't inspected their code. But I would say, if you're pasting plain text into any website, even if they're claiming to encrypt it beforehand, you just have to assume that the people running the website are going to have access to what you pasted in. You know, sometimes you see a web service and they go online and say, do this, paste in all your private stuff. And they say, and look, you can even inspect our code on GitHub to see how secure it is. But, you know, you have no guarantees that the code on GitHub that they released open source is actually what their server is running. So I would say, you know, without saying anything specific about them, because I don't know them and I don't know the people running it, if you're pasting plain text, even if it's including a password into a site, you just have to assume the owners of the website are going to have access.
Now, let's talk a little bit about security audits. What is a security audit? What's involved?
Good question. So a lot of our larger clients, I would say all of our Fortune 100 clients, usually request that we go through a security audit before we do any work for them. Sometimes that security audit is part of the sales process, so they won't even consider giving us the project until we've passed it. Sometimes that security audit is after we have the project, but before we can start writing code, and then it's more of a company and processes audit. And sometimes that audit is during development, and they audit a number of things. First of all, they audit our processes. They want to understand how we deal with storing code, how we deal with storing private information. I'll talk about private information separately because that's a little bit different. But how we deal with storing our code, how we deal with deployments, who's hosting a website, where will that hosting be, who's responsible for the security there, are there firewalls, are there measures in place to detect intrusions, and are there measures in place to log intrusions? And not only are you detecting and logging, but are there measures in place to actually deal with logged intrusions? A lot of companies put logs up on servers, but they don't actually have any process to, you know, to look over those logs every so often, detect if there's something actually happening that shouldn't be and resolve it. They want to know who at your company is responsible for those things. Do you have a chief security officer? Do you have someone on the tech team that's responsible for security company-wide, or is it more project by project? And then on the personal information side, they want to know who's going to have access at our company to their clients' personal, their clients' data, and that could mean, you know, registration data for our clients' users. They want to know how we store that information, what servers is it going to be on, if it's encrypted, where it's encrypted, how it's encrypted, is it encrypted by the application, is it encrypted by the database, do we use real data on staging, do we keep real copies of real production data locally on development environments, are we backing it up, all of that. And then you get into actual code audits where, you know, we're getting security scans, we're getting what's called fuzzed. We're getting penetration tests. They want to know if we run those tests, and then a lot of times our clients will actually have their own security operations departments that want to run those tests too, and they'll run all kinds of security scans and auditing against our code. They also want to know what our processes are for deploying new code. You know, do we re-scan and re-penetration test when we're doing deployments based on new features?
So for, I guess, all of these different areas where a security audit may be involved, is it something where there's like a form that you fill out and a checklist? Are you working one-on-one or a team with the client going through these questions and them sort of going in and validating? What's sort of the relationship of them getting the answers to these key questions?
So again, I would separate which questions we're talking about. The first set of questions is usually just the processes, company type questions. Again, who's responsible for security? Who's responsible for deployments? They want to know a lot of times about physical security at our office. Is it locked? Are there key cards? Are computers locked? What's the backup situation? They want to know if we have a wireless network and if that wireless network is physically separate from our wired network and how we control access to it. That's usually as a form. And some of our clients have literally online portals where you fill all of that out, and sometimes they'll just email it to you as an Excel spreadsheet or a Word document. That's generally in a form. The code audit or the security audit part is typically not in a form, because that's typically we need to put our code on some kind of staging server somewhere and let them run their tools in there, and basically we let them try to hack it after we've done our testing.
Cool. Now, a lot of these things sound like it lets the client know in advance what they're dealing with, so it has a lot of benefit to them. Is there any benefit to these different audits for you as a company? Like, do you learn lessons from each audit and sort of integrate it into future projects?
Absolutely. Absolutely. These audits, the first time we did one, I thought it was just a giant pain. I was like, why do I need to fill out a 30-page document about the physical security in my office? And I was a little annoyed by it, and that was a couple of years ago. And then I realized, you know what, it's legitimate. If we want these kinds of clients, if we want big projects that are dealing with a lot of data, you know, these are good questions that they're asking. And the questions they're asking might expose some weaknesses in our process to me. And first of all, I'd say that from a process point of view, we've gotten a lot of benefits. You know, when we've had clients ask certain things, and we've actually said, you know what, we don't do that, but that's a great idea, and we're going to start doing that for your project, and we're going to do that for all of our projects. And then, you know, on the security side, I don't think there's any piece of software out there that is entirely bug-free or security hole-free, right? Like, there are software programs out there that have been out for decades and decades, and, you know, you still find security problems. So I don't think anybody could promise that, but every time that a security problem gets exposed, oh, that's another thing. You know what? That was a mistake we made. And maybe that's a process mistake where we didn't test it well enough. Maybe that's a coding mistake where we made a mistake in our code. maybe that's a testing mistake where we need to enhance our own test suites so that that kind of thing never leaves our development, you know, our local development. So we've learned a lot of lessons that way, and we've certainly been introduced to security attacks of the type that we had never even heard of before, but are legitimate attacks that people could be running, you know, bad actors could be running on all of our sites at any time. So we've learned a lot from this process. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes I'm learning because it's 2 a.m. and I get a phone call from a client security operations team. That's pretty rare. The one thing I'll say is that I think what it's helped us do is on some of these projects, it's helped us put into place a much better pre-release security testing infrastructure. So now we have automated tools, we have manual tools, and we have automated tools, and we know what to scan and how to scan and where to scan and what to try, you know, before we actually release anything to the wild and to our client security team.
Well, it sounds like it's a very comprehensive type of process to do all of this. And you mentioned earlier that you have a variety of clients from the Fortune 100 to a tiny small business. So would you go through this process as well for that tiny small business, or do you have an altered process?
We would go through the entire code security process for our smaller clients. I think that you cannot cut security from a budget. You know, if a client has a small budget, then that's maybe you need to relook at features or look at other things, but you can't say, you know what, it's easier to allow SQL injections, so whatever. You know, you can't do that because you're exposing your client to a lot of issues, a lot of potential issues. It's not good. You really have to have zero tolerance for that stuff inside of your organization. And our team takes SQL injection and XSS and all of that kind of stuff really seriously. And if you start on any project saying, you know what, it doesn't really matter, it starts a bad habit. You know what I mean? Because then you start saying that when you're in time crunches, and you start saying that for everybody. So I would say that we really don't cut corners on any size client for that. But of course, smaller clients, they don't ask for us to fill out 30-page audits about our physical office security. You know, we don't do anything like that.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just curious. You mentioned that you've established, I guess, like a security infrastructure. These are processes that you follow to address the things that you're talking about, like XSS, SQL injections. Can you give us, our listeners, a few examples of what is involved or like what's included in that infrastructure?
Sure. And actually, do you mind if I just back up for one
second?
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, one other thing I'd add is that sometimes there are steps, security steps we need to take that are important to a specific client, but might not be generally applicable. So we have one client that we're working with right now. It's a very well-known brand, and they have internal security standards that are around encrypting in the database level. So you can't have any unencrypted data in your database at all if it's about, if it's what's called PII, personally identifiable information. And, you know, every company's definition of PII tends to be pretty different. But this company, they felt basically anything is PII. You know, a username is PII, login information, not passwords, but, you know, last login time, anything like that is PII. So basically, they required that we encrypt, do what's called encryption at rest in the database. So if anyone were to load a database backup, literally all the information and all the tables would be totally encrypted. Mm. And we have to handle that in our application. So our application, before we insert any rows or update any rows, we encrypt all the data, insert it, and then we have to decrypt it on the way out. Smaller clients and even big clients may not care about that. We have a lot of big clients that don't care about, you know, encryption at rest and don't want the potential performance penalties of that kind of thing. So I wouldn't say that's us not doing best practices for all of our clients, but I would say that some clients have different needs.
That makes sense. So in terms of what sort of the basic things you do to help ensure that you're preventing attacks, what are some of the tools you use or processes you follow internally?
First of all, I would say use your framework or CMS's input classes. Expression Engine has a great input class. Laravel has a great input class. CodeIgniter has a great input class. You really shouldn't be dealing directly with GET and POST and things like that directly unless that has gone through your application's input class first. The other thing is don't try to write your own security. There's tons of existing open source libraries that are either part of your framework already that have been tested way better than anything you could test. You know, you should never try to write your own password hashing algorithm. You should never try to write your own anti-XSS stuff. And if you do that, if you just trust what's in there and make sure that you consistently use it, you know, that fixes 90% of the common issues. So that's the first thing that's on our list. We just make sure that when we're coding something, we're using the built-in input classes, we're using the built-in XSS, we're using the built-in password hashing and all of that. You know, taking it to the next level, we have tools that we use, and Burp Suite is certainly one of them, and SQL Map is certainly another one of them, and there are a couple internal tools we have as well, and that's around automating. So in those cases, you can, you know, point it at a form or point it at a URL, let it try to do some automated SQL injections and all of that. That's part of our suite of tools as well. And you know, the other thing is you want to make sure that as far as or what we do is we make sure we're using the built-in templating languages escaping. So one common vulnerability that you see all the time is people allow user inputted data to be directly output to a template. Like you collect a freeform, in expression engine terms, you'd collect freeform data and then you'd output it directly. And if you're not escaping that, you can be HTML escaping that, you can be opening yourself up to a type of attack called cross-site scripting. So, you know, make sure that you're using your framework or language's built-in escaping tools. Don't try to write your own regex or anything. You know, use the PHP one, use the expression engine one, use the Laravel one. If you're using Python, there's some great templating tools out there that have escaping on. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Well, do you use any third-party services on top of the current internal items?
I wouldn't say we use services, but we certainly use third-party software.
Okay.
Burp Suite. BURP suite is one piece of software that's very, very widely used in just the security industry. It's penetration testing and all of that. SQL Map is another one. SQL Map is a great tool that allows you to, you can literally, you know, point it at forms. You can simulate GET and POST requests, and it will try to figure out as much as it can using basically SQL injections about your underlying infrastructure. And people might be saying, well, you know, I escape all of my input coming from SQL, so it's not a problem. And that might be true, but you might be exposed to other attacks. There's something called a blind SQL injection that can be tested for, and there's a couple others. So we use that and generally throw that against our forms to make sure that we're not vulnerable to that.
I'm curious, a lot of the things you've described, they sound like they take some time. And so, and I guess I'm aiming this question a bit at when you first started being very detailed with your security and you were first getting these audits from clients. Did it have a big impact on the time and costs of a project? And has that stayed the same over time as you've gotten more adept at it?
It's definitely gotten more efficient as we've done it more. You know, the first times that we had to do things like this, you don't really know, and it took a lot of time. I'd say these days, it's not a significant portion of our project's budgets. It's not something that we have to spend weeks and weeks and weeks on, you know. Mm-hmm. You can save yourself a lot of time by making sure that you're developing with best practices. So what you don't want to do is develop the site insecurely and then test it later, because then you are going to be spending weeks and weeks fixing things. Mm-hmm. But if you have a really good culture in your organization of building things securely and testing things then and letting other people review it, it makes your job at the end easy, because typically you're going to avoid a lot of issues during the build process.
And is it something that you build into your proposals to win projects, your emphasis on security and your protocols?
It depends. If the client's a big client that is going to have a security operations team, then absolutely. We'll mention it up front. We'll talk about it. Generally, they'll honestly ask about it. And again, they'll ask a lot about processes as well. You know, who has access to data? Who controls data? Are we using two-factor authentication, et cetera, et cetera? Small clients, you know, we'll mention that we use best practices, but a lot of times they're not very technical. And if we start talking to them about SQL injections and cross-site scripting and all of that, then they kind of glaze over. And I think a lot of times also small companies are just kind of small clients. They're trusting you. You know, they're hiring you because they trust that you'll do these best practices. And mm-hmm. So we're doing them not because like we promised it in the sales process per se, but we're doing it because we promised them that we would do right by them and build them a quality piece of infrastructure. And if we're not doing that, even on the server level, you know, we've failed for them. I wouldn't say we failed for them, but we're not necessarily doing best practices for them.
So I'm curious then, when you're building in security or pitching security, et cetera, how much can you actually guarantee to a client even with an audit? Like, how much responsibility do you take if/when something happens?
You can't guarantee it. I mean, first of all, black hat, bad actors, there's many more of them than there are of us, and they're much more financially incentivized to find exploits than most developers are to fix them, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a problem, and that's just something that's unavoidable. Because it's you and your development team against literally any bad actor on the internet who just constantly scans sites. And you can't guarantee your clients anything. You just can't. And as much as they want to see it, it's just the example I went back to before. Like, we could do everything right, every best practice in the whole world, and, you know, some new kind of exploit might be discovered tomorrow that we're vulnerable to that we didn't even know about. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just every piece of software has bugs. Every piece of software has security holes. You know, look at Google. You know, Google has a huge security operations team that was always posting online and talking about everything they do, and deserve, I'm sure, some of the smartest guys out there. And they still have a bug bounty program because they get, you know, exploited constantly. So I would say that if a client gets exploited, it's something that we try to deal with as soon as possible and try to fix it for them and try to learn how it happened. But you can't really guarantee. You can't guarantee to a client that they're never going to have a problem.
Now, this is a more business money question, but if a client comes to you and maybe it's been 3 years since you launched their site and maybe you've been doing some maintenance work here and there, some major security breach happens, and you, of course, you fix it. Is that something that's sort of like a warranty for your original project, or you do bill them for that additional work to fix something that came up?
Yeah, I mean, just in general, we bill everything hourly in our projects, you know, even at the end. Because we tell clients, you know, they should budget some for, you know, post-launch type work. So because we bill everything hourly anyway, I get what you're saying. Client might say, well, you told me you'd build this properly, but... You know, you hope to have clients that understand that we're a services organization. We did the best we can. We did probably a lot more than a lot of other companies would do. And there's just, you know, exploits are just kind of a part of doing business. You know, as I said, the biggest companies in the world that have just major dedicated security operations teams, they still have security problems. Mm-hmm. So... you hope your client understands that.
Let's bring it back to Expression Engine. Earlier, you mentioned that some of the issues are dealing with third-party add-on security. With that in mind, can you tell our listeners how to fix that? What are the most common third-party security holes that should be patched?
Yeah. First of all, if you find a security hole in a third-party add-on, you should submit it to the add-on maker immediately. Like, patch it on your side and then submit a diff to the add-on maker. Mm-hmm. We do that. We've emailed a lot of add-on makers and just basically said, hey, this is a problem here. You need to take a look at this. And they fix it. I've never had an add-on maker say to me, oh, this is nonsense. I'm not going to fix this. I think all of them are happy to be getting security audited by, you know, dedicated security operations teams. Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to worry most, first of all, about add-ons that are taking user input. So let's not even talk about the admin, the control panel for a second. But if you have an add-on, I've never found an issue in Freeform, but I'm just going to use Freeform as an example on Expression Engine. Like, Freeform takes user input, deals with user input, and outputs user input. And so an add-on like that is going to potentially have security problems. I've never seen anything like that in Freeform, it's just an example. So that's where you have to be careful, first of all. Like, add-ons that are interacting with the user in some way, like, are they taking input? Are they getting parameters from query strings so they have action URLs? You have to worry about that stuff. The other thing you have to think about is, what's your trust model for admin users? If you feel like you can totally trust anybody on the admin side, then things are a lot easier, because we've seen a ton of security problems with the control panel interfaces for add-ons, and we've submitted those to our add-on developers, but we might on our side not see those as a priority one threat, because our trust model for that particular client is that if you have a properly authenticated session on the admin side, we basically trust you effectively. Right. And we do that in a couple of different ways, and a couple of clients rewritten some of the Expression Engine authentication stuff to have a better security model based on what they need. But if you can't trust people on the admin side, then you have to worry about any add-on that has, you know, a module interface, an extension interface, anything like that. Because, I mean, then you have tons of problems. We've seen people, add-on makers, that use the input classes on the front end, but not on the back end, because they figure, whatever, it's the control panel, who cares? But that could be a major problem. You could have someone who's only authorized to be an editor, but suddenly they've taken control of the whole system. Again, if you feel like you can trust your editors or your non-super admin users, that's less of an issue for you.
Now, is there anything that is unique about Expression Engine that makes it particularly good with just fundamental security with the platform?
First of all, I think LS Lab, certainly they take security seriously. I think if you were to submit a security issue to LS Lab, they would fix it very quickly. And I know that's certainly the case of a lot of open source tools as well. You know, you could either fix it yourself or submit it to the, or do a pull request or whatever. But there are some other commercial applications out there where the sponsoring organization or the owner is not quite as responsive as LS Lab. So that's one thing that Expression Engine certainly is going for it. And it's something that we mention whenever we're trying to pitch a client on Expression Engine. And the other thing is, it's a pretty mature product. And it's been looked over a lot. It's gone through security audits by us. It's gone through security audits by lots of other people. You know, you see people online talking about security audits. So it's had the opportunity to go through a lot of different audits and fixes and all of that. So I think really the low-hanging fruit is probably not there on Expression Engine. Hmm. It's probably more complicated stuff at this point.
Now, how about Expression Engine's security and session preferences? And I bring this up because we had a listener on Twitter ask us, Andrew Farley had a question about cookies and sessions or cookies only. If you could address that question, but then also maybe talk about whether developers should be making modifications to those preferences for new builds.
Sure. So I don't necessarily think that cookies only versus session ID is only or the mix, I don't think one is necessarily better than the other. I think, again, it's about your threat model. I think before, you know, when you're doing a project, you have to understand what are you actually trying to protect against here. And Expression Engine does a pretty good job explaining the pros and cons of each approach. You know, like if you just have a session ID and authenticate through that versus if you have a cookie versus it even has a preference about if you want it to check like browser user agent strings against the login so that nobody can spoof your cookie or anything like that. I don't think one is necessarily more secure than the other, but I think that if you read the differences between them, you can understand what fits better from a security point of view for your specific client. Like, is your client going to be logged in from a number of different places? Are they remembering me? You know, are they doing a remember me login? All of that. Big mistake that people make is that they give their client one admin username and password and just have their client share that amongst their like 20 employees. And that's a big problem because then you have to have, first of all, if they fire somebody or they hire somebody, they're suddenly sharing this password. Then you have trouble auditing what people are doing. And then you run into issues with sessions and people. Like there was a bug in EE up until a recent release where you'd keep on logging each other out if you had, I think it was cookies only because it would like check the source IP address and all of that. So I think as long as you have different logins for all of your clients' employees and you understand the threat model and you understand the differences, I don't necessarily have a preference with those.
And so do you make any changes to the default settings for security and session preferences for your Expression Engine projects?
And that's a good question. I actually don't know what the default settings are because we have a pre-built sandbox that we just start all of our sites on. I could see what that's set to, though. I don't know if you were to download EE from scratch these days, what it would default to be honest with you.
So we've been talking a lot about the technical aspects of securing a site. And I think you kind of touched on this about like, do you trust your admins and things like that? But sometimes the best security can be thwarted simply through social engineering. So does Vector Media take some of those things into account with a security audit and how you secure your site or recommendations you give to your client?
Yeah, of course. I mean, first of all, there's at some point you're going to run into the human thing, right? Like you could do, as you're saying,
yes.
You can do everything you can on the code side. You can make everything super secure, but there are humans involved and humans have flaws, unfortunately, for all of us.
Sure.
So I talked before about not allowing clients to have access to passwords, plain text passwords. I called up one of our clients' hosting providers the other day, and I was trying to get some information. They said, I was on the phone with their support, and they said, I just need to authenticate you. Can you read me? Can you tell me the account's password? And I said, really? Like, you're a hosting company, and you're asking me to, first of all, tell you the account's password? I said, if I were to tell it to you, do you need me to, like, spell it slowly? And he said, no, I just compare it to what I see on the screen. I said, that's crazy. It's crazy that you can see a plain text password on the screen, and it's crazy that you're asking me to read you my password out loud. You know, that's super insecure. So, you know, there are certainly technical steps you can take to prevent people from doing that. But at some point, again, you have to ask, how much can I protect people against themselves? And sometimes the most secure thing that you would do for people would prevent them from doing legitimate business activities. Not that this hosting thing was legitimate, because that was crazy that they asked that. But, you know, there are other things, you know. Some of our clients are concerned about, as I said before, personally identifiable information. So they say, well, people shouldn't have access to personally identifiable information unless they're authorized. We say, well, you know what? This client has a business need to go and be able to change people's email addresses when they get customer support inquiries and read their name and see some of their activities so they can help on the customer support side. So you have to balance that. And unfortunately, sometimes it just means a lot of training to the people that have admin. I don't know if that answers your question fully or if that was a good answer, but it's something that we train clients to. You know, we make sure clients understand what the threat risks are and that they're authorizing the minimum level of admin access necessary. Another good example is, even if we give them super admin login information, we'll generally also make a lesser admin for them and tell them to use that day to day. Like for their main, they shouldn't be using a super admin login to publish a new blog post. Even necessarily to register a new member. Like, keep that as a super secure password, put that to the side. If you ever need that, whatever, it's fine. But day to day, use your less privileged user.
Now, before we finish up, is there some overarching advice you could give to someone to help them build a site in a more secure fashion?
In the sense of just kind of any just generic site or...
Honestly, I can say that I don't feel like I've necessarily built all of my projects in the most secure fashion. I've tried to follow the best practices, but maybe someone like me who's not really sure, what would be one of the first steps I could do for my next project?
Let me ask you a question. When you say you haven't built in the most secure way, what does that mean? You just mean you haven't thought about it, or are there
specific... it's not something I've thought about beyond going through some of like the security and session preferences, but I certainly don't do any of the coding tests that you mentioned for cross-site scripting and SQL injections. So it makes me feel that maybe some things could be insecure, like I haven't done any testing.
First of all, if you're using, I'll just talk about Expression Engine for a second here, but what I'm going to say, you know, applies to anything. Remember that any Expression Engine add-on has access to your entire database and all user input that goes into the system. So like, even if you have the tiniest little plugin, if that plugin tag is running on a page, it's going to get access to every get and post request and everything. And that could, it could potentially do anything it wants to your database. It could read everything. It could send, it could read your whole database and send all your contents, you know, in an email, even the most innocuous looking plugin. So the first thing I would say is, don't download random plugins and add, and extensions and modules before you've either looked through the code, or if you haven't looked through the code, get somebody that you know that can look through the code, or get things from trusted developers, right? Like, Soulspace is not going to intentionally delete your whole database and email the contents to them, right? And Pixel and Tonic's not going to do that, and Low is not going to do that, and DevDaemon's not going to do that. So be very careful when you download these little add-ons from Devotee, that even that they look small, literally there's, you know, there's no permission in place. Once you install that extension, it can literally do anything it wants. That's the first step. And by the way, the same thing applies really to WordPress and Drupal and another number of other systems, right? Be very careful about what you're installing. You know, the second thing is, again, I don't know if you're writing custom add-ons or anything like that, or custom PHP, but if you are, use what's built into Expression Engine. Use the input class, use the XSS, use the sanitizer, all of that before you do anything, because a lot of work has gone into those. And don't ever try to write your own security. Like, never try to write your own password hashing algorithm. I mean, for fun, sure, but never in production. You know, don't try to write your own sanitizer. Don't try to write any of that. There's stuff that's out there that's been tested that's known to be good.
Awesome. So that's a lot of good advice. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. So are you ready?
I hope so.
All right. First question, Mac OS or Windows?
Mac.
What's your favorite mobile app?
Oh, you know what? I love this app called Captio, C-A-P-T-I-O, because I use my inbox as a to-do list. And Captio, you just pre-program your email address and you open it up, write yourself a quick note and hit send, and it automatically emails it to you with the subject line and everything. So it's like, you don't have to spend, I mean, it seems silly, but you save a lot of taps in composing it, entering your email address, subject, and all of that. It's cool.
Oh, Emily, I think you'd like that.
I know, that's got my name written all over it.
Yeah, I use it all the time.
All right. What is your least favorite thing about social media?
It's such a time suck, right? Like, I hate that I feel guilty when I have not been on Twitter for a week. I try to spend a lot less time, and you get this guilt, and you're like, what am I feel guilty about? This is supposed to be for fun, you know? So I really hate that.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, man. I'd love to be like an electrical engineer. I think that'd be awesome. I have a lot of fun with that kind of stuff, building things.
Cool. What profession would you not like to do?
Kindergarten teacher. My sister is a kindergarten teacher, and she has the patience of a saint, and I have a lot of respect for her, and I just don't think I'm made for that.
Who is the web professional you admire the most?
Some of the security people in our clients' organizations, they're very serious about what they do. They spend a lot of time protecting, and often, you know, if you're a security engineer at a big company, like, you don't get known unless it's for bad things, right? Like, nobody respects what you do until there's an intrusion. Then you're like, why didn't you do better? So I have a lot of respect for those kind of people. And then separately, I have a lot of respect for Ryan Ireland, actually, mm-hmm. who I think is super smart. He does a lot of great work for the community. He does a lot of great work for Expression Engine. He really knows what he's talking about. And I've had a number of conversations with that guy that were just really insightful to me.
So what music do you like to code to?
I put on the 80s pop Pandora. The Pandora 80s pop station. Just leave it on.
Awesome. What's your secret talent?
Oh, no. I don't have one. Oh, I am very good at eating matzah without getting crumbs all over, which is like a very hard thing. If you've had matzah, you would realize, I don't know if you guys have had matzah, but it's like a very crumbly, kind of messy experience. So I feel like I'm, you know, it's been almost 3 decades of matzah eating for me. So I feel like I'm getting there.
Nice. So what's the most recent book you've read?
Oh, God. I have an 8-month-old daughter, so I guess Donde Está Spot?
Awesome.
Lastly, Star Wars or Star Trek?
You know, truthfully, Star Trek, but I get made fun of at my office for that, so Star Aww. Wars, I guess.
Flip-flopper. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
We do as well. In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
So my Twitter handle is MRW, just my initials MRW. My email address is matt@vectormediagroup.com, M-A-T-T @vectormediagroup.com. And I, you know, encourage anybody to email me, tweet me, or anything, you know, at any time.
Great. Thanks again, Matt. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Peers Conference, and Pixel and Tonic.
We also want to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter @ControlClickCast or visit our website, ControlClickCast.com.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we'll be talking about SaaS workflows with Ben Frain. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.